Very good afternoon to one and all, and thanks for joining in again. This is the sixth session in the past 2 days that we are trying to discover various sources, how we can make our planet cleaner, more healthier. And so to introduce our next guest, I'm going to invite my colleague Ritesh Shah. Before I do that, I would like to request everybody to keep their phone on mute, please, or mic on mute and their cameras off, except for the guest and the host. You will get an opportunity to ask your question by raising your virtual hand. Please note that this conference will be recorded. Over to you, Ritesh. Thank you.
Thank you, Sapna. Thank you, all the participants, for joining on for this session. We have with us Dr. Deepak Yadav. He is Program Associate at CEW. I'll start with briefly introducing him. Dr. Deepak works on the sustainability analysis of low carbon and renewable technologies for industrial decarbonization. At the Council, his work involves developing a roadmap for how to decarbonize industrial sectors, engaging with industrial partners on carbon mitigation strategies, and supporting policy making with insightful analysis. Deepak is currently focusing on alternative fuels, renewable hydrogen, and low carbon energy sources such as natural gas for mitigating industrial emissions. It is wonderful to have you on board, Dr. Deepak, for this very session. I'll request you to start with your presentation, post which we'll have a brief Q&A session. Thank you so much, and it's a pleasure to have you on board for this.
Thank you, Ritesh. I hope I'm audible and you can see my screen.
Yes.
Thank you, Swapna, Ritesh, and Apurva for giving me an opportunity to present our work on green hydrogen opportunities and challenges for India. Before we get into discussion, a quick introduction about CEW. So we are among Asia's leading policy research institutions. We work across 7 focus areas. Plus, we have a CEW Center for Energy Finance. Myself and my colleague Hemant on the call, we work in the industrial sustainability and competitiveness team, where, as the name suggests, we look at 2 aspects, the industrial sustainability part and also the competitiveness, so that there is a sustainable transition in India. Now, globally, more than 33 countries have already announced their national hydrogen strategies, or they are in the preparation mode. For India, in addition to climate change, there is one more incentive to switch towards a green hydrogen ecosystem. So today, we import close to $140 billion worth of fossil fuels, and our Honorable Prime Minister has already given us a vision of energy independent India by the year 2047, when we celebrate the 100 years of independence. And green hydrogen goes a long way in meeting or achieving those targets. Now, green hydrogen from a climate perspective is also very important. It's very important because green hydrogen has the potential to mitigate emissions from the so-called hard-to-abate industrial and transport sector. And industries, I'm talking about fertilizers, refineries, petrochemical plants, and also steel plants. In mobility applications, in addition to heavy-duty, long-distance freight, we are talking about aviation sector and marine sector, where battery electric vehicles are very difficult to commercialize. Now, before we get into details of techno-economics and electrolyzers, etc., just a brief introduction on various colors of hydrogen. So, when hydrogen produced from coal, which is essentially a coal gasification process, that hydrogen color is called as black. So that is black hydrogen. When we produce hydrogen from lignite, then people call that hydrogen as brown hydrogen. There is something called as gray hydrogen, which is essentially your hydrogen, which is obtained from the steam methane reforming or natural gas-based processes. Again, there is in this particular process, there is a production of hydrogen and carbon dioxide. Now, if the carbon dioxide, which is produced during the coal gasification process or the steam methane reforming process, is sequestered, then the hydrogen is called as blue hydrogen. There is something which is called as turquoise hydrogen, and we at CEW are working on this, where essentially you produce hydrogen from natural gas, but there is no production of carbon dioxide. What we essentially produce is solid carbon, which then has various industrial applications. And finally, there is something called as renewable electrolysis or green hydrogen. So what happens in this process is you have renewable electricity, you couple it with a device called as electrolyzer, you produce hydrogen and oxygen. Now, in addition to this green hydrogen, there are various other colors, and I can just mention them. There is something which is called as yellow hydrogen, which is essentially your hydrogen produced using only solar electricity. And then there is pink hydrogen, which is hydrogen produced using nuclear power. So these are like various colors of hydrogen that people are talking about now. Now, coming back to the existing opportunities for green hydrogen in India. So today, our three sectors, and here I am talking about refineries, fertilizers, and methanol, they together consume about close to 5.6, the numbers, the absolute numbers vary, but the ballpark estimate is consumption of about 5.6 million tons of hydrogen per annum. Now, just to give an overall idea on what will it take for us to convert this 5.6 million tons of hydrogen into green hydrogen, we'll need about 150 gigawatts of solar installation, about 100 gigawatts of electrolyzer capacity, and at today's cost, a total investment of about $170 billion. Moving in the next subsequent slide, we'll see a breakdown of all these cost numbers and renewable electrolyzer capacity. Now, what are the upcoming opportunities for India? So there is something which is green hydrogen injection in glass furnaces, and the literature suggests that green hydrogen can meet about 15 to 20% of the energy demand in glass furnaces, and in technical terms, here I'm talking about the green hydrogen injection of about 25 to 30 kg per ton of hot metal. So, and India produced somewhere around 74-75 MTPA of iron last year. And if you do the math, then that the existing potential of green hydrogen in glass furnaces alone, it is about 2 MTPA. Here we don't know what is the amount of hydrogen that can be injected in existing rotary kilns, for example, and the total investment is about $60 billion. We have also done a math, and this is with certain set of assumptions on the number of electric vehicles, but in the mobility application, especially for heavy duty long distance transport, there is a potential investment of about $11 billion that is possible by the year 2030. And they also talked about green hydrogen blending in natural gas pipelines. And globally, people are talking about a green hydrogen blend of about 15 to 20% on a volume basis. So with that particular assumption, the total hydrogen that can be injected in gas pipelines across India is about 0.65 MTPA, and that will need an investment of about $20 billion. Now, if you sum up all these upcoming opportunities, the total hydrogen demand that we are looking at is about 2.8 MTPA that we need solar installation of about 72 gigawatts, electrolyzer installation of about 50 gigawatts, with the investment opportunity of about $91 billion. Now, in addition to this, there are other applications that I mentioned in one of the earlier slides, which is aviation industry and marine transport, but they are like a few years ahead of the upcoming opportunities that have been thrown here. Now, if we talk about the techno-economics of grey hydrogen production, which is essentially from natural gas, and renewable or green hydrogen production from solar and wind electricity, we see that the cost of hydrogen from natural gas is about $1.5 per kg, and this corresponds to a natural gas price of about $8 per MMBTU. Now, here if you look at the breakup, most of the cost is coming from the cost of your fuel itself. And of course, when the cost of fuel increases from $8 to $10 or $12 per MMBTU, then the cost of grey hydrogen will also increase significantly. Now, in terms of renewable hydrogen, and here what this graph shows is the levelized cost of hydrogen using various renewable energy sources. So I'm talking about solar electricity alone, which is yellow hydrogen that I mentioned earlier. There is wind electricity alone, and there is a wind solar hybrid. And this graph here, this is for open access based renewable electricity in the state of Gujarat. And here we have considered the solar and wind profiles of Kutch. Well, Kutch primarily because last year Honorable Prime Minister inaugurated a 30 gigawatt wind solar hybrid plant in Kutch. So this is a representative case. Now, here we see that the cost of hydrogen produced from solar energy alone is significantly higher than from wind energy alone or a wind solar hybrid. And you know, this particular case is considering a green hydrogen availability of about 62% on an annual basis. So, you know, starting from let's say 5% availability to about 80% availability, the cost numbers, they more or less remain the same. So this number can be considered for let's say 5% to about 80-85% now, here the distribution of cost is also very important. So here, for example, in case of solar only operation, we see that the electrolyzer cost is very dominant, as even it is higher than the solar cost of solar system alone. But in case of wind only operation, the electrolyzer cost decreases significantly as compared to the capital investment which is needed in case of wind power plant. For a wind solar hybrid, we see again there is a breakdown. So the cost is primarily dominant by the share of wind electricity. The solar component is slightly higher and the cost of electrolyzer also decreases significantly. Then I can give you a ballpark number on the electrolyzer capacity which is needed. So for solar only application, we are looking at the electrolyzer capacity of about 17 gigawatts per MTP of green hydrogen. For wind only operation, it is about 9 gigawatts per MTPA. And for wind solar hybrid, it is about 8 gigawatts per MTPA. The absolute numbers will depend on your solar and wind electricity profile. So this is for such, but if you are doing it for Bellary or if you are doing it for some location in Uttar Pradesh, then the numbers are in such range and the absolute value or the relative values will change. Now, if you are looking at the capital investment is needed, then for gray hydrogen production process, a capital investment is about $3 billion per MTPA. The absolute value depends on the size of your SMR unit. So the higher you go for size, your capital investment reduces proportionally. But for green hydrogen production processes, and this is about the green hydrogen availability of about 80%, we are looking at a total capital investment of about $21 billion per MTPA. For 100% availability of green hydrogen, the capital investment is about $30 billion per MTPA. So these are the numbers today, but globally many industries have set a very aggressive target. So Linde and Nel, for example, we are talking about a green hydrogen price of $1.5 per kg by the year 2025. Today, if we are at around like the $4 per kg, and this is through open access route. Without open access, the cost is about $3.5 per kg. So roughly from $3.5 a kg, Nel and Linde are talking about $1.5 or 1.5 euros per kg by 2025. Reliance and Steel, they have set a target of about $1 per kg by 2030, and this is the famous 111 target that we'll see in the next slide. Omium, an Indian manufacturer, they have set a more aggressive target, and they are talking about $1 per kg by 2025. Now, what will it take for us to achieve the 111 target on green hydrogen? So let me first explain what do we mean by 111 target. So 111 target essentially means $1 per kilogram, per 1 kilogram of green hydrogen in one decade. So essentially this means by the year 2030 or 2031, industries around the world and also research institutions, they want to achieve a green hydrogen price of $1 per kg. So that is the target. But let's see what will it take to achieve that particular size target of $1 per kg. So in case of solar installations today, the cost of generation is about 2.2 rupees per unit. To achieve that $1 per kg target, we need a green hydrogen. We need solar electricity at around 0.84 to 1.1 rupees per unit. It depends on whether there is somebody who is willing to buy the oxygen that you produce or what is the price of oxygen that you get. But the ballpark estimate is about 0.85 to 1.1 rupees per unit. In terms of electrolyzer, and you know the costs are changing rapidly. We hear that the electrolyzer costs have reached about $200 per kilowatt. But to be on the conservative end, from today's level of about $750 per kilowatt, the price of electrolyzer has to reduce to about $200 per kilowatt. The electrolyzer tax, which constitutes about 45 to 50% of the electrolyzer cost, it has to double from 8.5 years today to about 17 years. And the overall efficiency of the electrolyzer has to increase from 66.5% today to about 80% to achieve that 111 target. In addition to solar electricity and electrolyzer, the cost of hydrogen storage has to reduce from $516 per kg today to about $345 per kg. So this is what it will take for us to meet that 111 target. And in the next few slides, we'll see that what happens if that 111 target is met. Now, so in India, when we're talking about the National Hydrogen Energy Mission, there is a talk that green hydrogen blending norms will be implemented in fertilizers and refineries, etc. And since supply chain infrastructure is not present today, the talks are that we'll go with the open access route. So we'll have renewable energy plants somewhere, let's say in Kutch, Gujarat, and we'll have your hydrogen consuming stations, essentially fertilizers and refinery plants somewhere in South Gujarat. So that and renewable electricity will be wheeled in real time from Kutch to South Gujarat. So that is what the plans are. But then there are certain concerns over here, and let me explain one of the concerns. What this particular graph shows is the consumption tariff of renewable electricity, and here I am talking about solar and wind electricity, in Gujarat, Uttar Pradesh and Haryana for solar and wind electricity. Right? So these three states here, they talk about the consumption tariff of solar electricity, and the later three, they talk about wind electricity, and let's look at them one by one. So we assume that, let's say in Gujarat, we are generating solar electricity at 2.2 rupees a unit, and that renewable electricity within the state of Gujarat. So this is Gujarat to Gujarat electricity. So 2.2, when it delivers, when it reaches the end consumer, let's say somewhere in South Gujarat, then that end consumer pays the electricity price of about 3.16 or 3.2 rupees per unit. And here 3.2, but in case of Uttar Pradesh, if somebody has solar installations in Uttar Pradesh and deals solar electricity within the state itself, and the delivered price of solar electricity is around 2.5 rupees per unit. And we have assumed that Haryana will not have, this is a representative case and it need not happen. We have considered that Haryana might not have access to solar electricity within their state, and definitely they will not have access to wind electricity. And our analysis suggests that for the state of Haryana, it is cheapest to wheel electricity from Karnataka. And therefore, if we assume that Karnataka, Haryana imports or deals renewable electricity from Karnataka, then the price that they pay is about 4.7 rupees per unit. And there is a similar graph which is shown on the right here for wind electricity. Now, what is the implication of such a inequity in renewable electricity prices is shown on the graph to the right. So what this graph shows is your levelized cost of hydrogen produced through open access mechanism for three states, and we have a similar curve for 10 to 12 states in India. And here we are showing it for Gujarat, UP and Haryana. And what you see on the x-axis is the percentage blend of green hydrogen. So just see the inequity here. So the dark green curve that you see, that is for the state of Gujarat. So this is the price that consumers, essentially refineries and fertilizer plants, might pay in Gujarat. I am not saying that this is very stringent. It will change depending on the renewable energy availability and the location from where you are sourcing your renewable energy from. But look at the curve for Uttar Pradesh. So the consumers in Uttar Pradesh will pay a higher price for green hydrogen, whereas the consumers in Haryana, they will pay a very high price. Now, you know, this curve, a very important feature here is that, let's say we are talking about 5% or 10% blend of green hydrogen, and the absolute difference across various states is not very significant. But as India gets ambitious on green hydrogen space, we see that the difference between, let's say, Gujarat and Haryana, it keeps on increasing as we go towards a higher blend of green hydrogen. And therefore, as we get ambitious on our national hydrogen energy mission, it is very important that the inequity-related issues across various states, and this is outside the hands of the end consumers of hydrogen, but that inequity needs to be answered, because otherwise, you know, let's say a refinery in Gujarat will have a lower price on green hydrogen, and hence their competitiveness will improve, whereas a refinery based in Uttar Pradesh or in Haryana, their competitiveness might reduce if they have to pay a very high premium on green hydrogen. Now, going to the next slide, and what we have done here is we know what across various states, what is the hydrogen consumption potential, that is there on the one side, and as you have seen on the other side, we know across various states how will the hydrogen cost curve look like. So we have taken a weighted average curve for India, and let's see what that weighted average curve looks like. So what this graph shows here is the renewable and electrolyzer capacity needed, which is in gigawatts per MTPA, by MTPA I mean million tons per atom of hydrogen, on the y-axis, primary y-axis, and on the secondary y-axis, you see the capital investment which is needed, and this is in today's prices, this is, let's say, 2021 or 2022 prices, this is $1 billion of capital investment needed per MTPA of green hydrogen which is produced, and on the x-axis, you see the share or the percentage share of green hydrogen. So we are talking about, let's say, starting from 5% or 7% share, and we are going all the way to about 100%. Now, there are three curves here. The first service, the electrolyzer capacity which is needed, this is pan-India average, weighted average. So our estimate shows that still our green hydrogen share of about 85 or 90%, your electrolyzer capacity which is needed is about 8 gigawatts per MTPA. Your renewable energy capacity, and when I say renewable energy, I mean a sum of both solar and wind, and we have a detailed breakdown as well, if anybody is interested. But your renewable energy capacity which is needed is about 20 gigawatts per MTPA of green hydrogen. And the capital investment that you are looking at, and this is a ballpark value, is about $21 billion per MTPA. Still a green hydrogen blend of about 85 or 90%. Now what happens beyond this particular value is something like Pareto's principle, which is a very famous principle in optimization of energy systems comes into picture. You essentially end up significantly oversizing your electrolyzer, your renewable energy systems, and you end up generating a lot of excess electricity or curtailed electricity, which has to be eventually curtailed if there are no consumers for that excess electricity. And then your electrolyzer capacity roughly doubles from 8 gigawatts per MTPA to about 17 to 18 gigawatts per MTPA. Your renewable energy installation capacity also increases significantly from, let's say, 20 gigawatts to about 27 gigawatts per MTPA, and your investment increases from about $21 billion per MTPA to about close to $31 billion per MTPA. But ballpark, if you are talking about a green hydrogen blend of up to 80%, then these numbers, they hold to pan-India. The absolute numbers and the nature of etc. will vary from state to state. Now, let's say the government says that, we want to go ahead with the National Hydrogen Energy Mission and we want to enforce a mandate on refineries that, hey, you have to start blending in 5%, 10%, or even 15% green hydrogen fuel. Then what are the price increase or implications that we are looking at?
So the graph shows here that the price increase across various refining commodities, and I'm talking about diesel, gasoline, ATF, naphtha, fuel, etc. For a green hydrogen, and here we also were very conservative, green hydrogen costs of about $5 per kg. This is because green hydrogen in refineries will be blended mostly through open access routes, and the premium will increase. And we consider that grey hydrogen is available at about $1.5 a kg. We see that if today, at today's prices, for a 15% blend of green hydrogen, the cost of diesel increases by about 36 paisa per litre, the cost increase in gasoline or petrol is about 30 paisa per litre, and there is very marginal increase in cost of other commodities with the exception of fuel oil, because fuel oil, the price increase is significantly high because a lot of sulfur has to be removed from the processing of fuel oil, and most importantly, there is no increase in the price of LPG. So, in this particular case, let's say the price of gasoline or diesel is about 70-80 rupees per litre, the increase is very marginal. But the question that we have to ask ourselves is, as we go on becoming more ambitious on green hydrogen blending norms, then who pays for the transition? So he might not even care about the 36 paisa or 30 paisa increase in price of diesel and gasoline, but I'm sure these people actually care. And so there are certain, in addition to economic aspects, there are also social aspects that need to be taken care of. And the social aspect becomes more important in case of fertilizer industry. For example, the government pays a subsidy of about, and this is 2019 or 20 number, government pays a subsidy of about 74,000 crores per annum on urea. And with just with a 15% blend of green hydrogen, the urea subsidy increases by about 974,000 crores per annum. And again, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, who will pay for this transition? Do we expect the taxpayers to pay for this transition? Because unlike refineries, where the additional price burden can be directly passed on to the consumers, in case of urea subsidy, in case of fertilizers, the additional burden might not be directly passed on to the end players, right? Or the taxpayers have to bail out the farmers in that particular case. Or do we expect the taxpayers, if not the taxpayers, then do we expect the farmers to pay that delta cost of the transition? So that is something that all of us need to think over. And coming back to the electrolyzer manufacturers, this particular graph here shows most of the electrolyzer manufacturers, fuel cell manufacturers, system integrators, and OEMs on hydrogen refueling stations. A very important and obvious takeaway from this graph is that most of the OEMs are located in the developed countries, and there are very few in developing countries. And one of the OEM in India
I think they were speaker in this particular panel today. So they are based in Bangalore and they have already started exporting electrolyzers to on China. Yes, there are many OEMs available, but we could find only a few. Most of them are not out there in the open domain. But the key takeaway is that as we talk about, you know, getting accuracy on natural hydrogen energy emission, we should also focus on electrolyzer, not only electrolyzer manufacturing, but also about fuel cell manufacturers, system integrators, and if we talk about hydrogen for mobility application, then hydrogen refueling station is also something that we need to get there. Now, in terms of manufacturing potential, this is something from literature. So, you know, 1 gigawatt of manufacturing facility needs a capital investment of about, you know, $45 to about $67 million. There's a wide range, but let's say we go ahead with $67 million number, and if there's a 10 MTPA of green hydrogen demand in India by 2030, then we need at most about 180 gigawatt of electrolyzer capacity, which means there has to be a capital investment of about $1.2 billion. Assuming 18 gigawatt of electrolyzer capacity is available in India. Globally, there are certain projections on green hydrogen demand uptake, and if those demands are also considered, then the global demand is about 150 gigawatts by 2030. And you know, in addition to electrolyzers, our manufacturers exporting are looking for markets outside. There is also a market for clean fuels, and here we are talking about East Asian countries like Japan, Singapore, and South Korea. So these are the manufacturing opportunities and export opportunities that are available if India can properly formulate policies and there is investment coming into the electrolyzer manufacturing chain. Now, this is something that we have worked on based on the information which is there in the literature, and we are just showing the breakdown here. For alkaline electrolyzers, and this is a breakdown of the electrolyzer stack cost. And electrolyzer stack cost is roughly 45% to 50% of the total electrolyzer cost. Now, in case of alkaline electrolyzer, about 84% of the total stack cost, can be indigenized because the resources, etc., are available in India. About 9% of the electrolyzer stack cost, we are depending on critical minerals, and about 8% of the electrolyzer stack cost is membrane for which we might or we might not have technology. Now, we can also go for about 100% indigenization if the electrolyzer membrane for alkaline electrolyzer is developed indigenously, and we have access to critical minerals either through recycling or we have some global supply chains which are established. Now, in case of PEM electrolyzer, our analysis, again from our literature, indicates that only 24% of the cost can be indigenized. And here again, I'm talking about electrolyzer stack cost, not just the total electrolyzer cost. About 47% of the electrolyzer cost is based on membrane. And yes, if those membranes, and here I'm talking about the catalyst coated membrane, if these membranes can be made in India, if the patents are available with us, and yes, even the 47% can be manufactured in India, and about 30% are based on critical minerals which are needed to support the electrolyzer stack cost. Again, if we have local supply chain coming from, let's say, recycling of critical minerals within India, and even this particular demand can be made through indigenization. But comparing these technologies, you know, with assuming that the membranes are not available in India and critical minerals are also not available in India, about 84% can be indigenized in case of alkaline electrolyzers, while about 24% can be indigenized in case of PEM electrolyzers. You know, again, I'll say that these numbers are from literature. We will need to see what manufacturers, of course, alkaline and PEM electrolyzers have got in there also. Now, going to applications of green hydrogen, and so this is something a report that we released in September last year. What this graph shows is green hydrogen used in steel making, the levelized cost of steel on the y-axis, and the levelized cost of hydrogen on the x-axis. And these numbers are slightly old, based on 2019 or 2020 costs here. What the numbers show for the year 2020, that the cost of green hydrogen is about, let's say, $4.4 a kg, with solar only it's about close to $5 a kg. So at the $4 to $5 per kg cost of green hydrogen, the cost of steel is about $600 to $650 per ton, which is exorbitantly high, because as you can see here, The grade strip indicates the cost of producing steel using the basic oxygen furnace or the blast furnace route, whereas the orange bar here, it shows the cost of producing steel using natural gas, which is available at about $13.5 per MMBTU. So at 2020 prices, we are looking at 50 to 70% premium on green hydrogen, which is fossil free steel. And the price of steel is expected to reduce with the price of hydrogen, and it is expected to follow this particular trend. Now, very important key takeaway is, in one of our earlier slides, we talked about the 111 target on green hydrogen. So if that $1 per kg price target on green hydrogen is met, and in our modeling analysis, we consider that particular price target will be implemented in the year 2050, but let's say it's met in 2027 or in 2020 or in 2030. And then in that particular case, the fossil-free steel becomes competitive. In fact, the production costs are expected to become lower than the lower range of your blast furnace cost. And yes, if we're talking about a fossil-free steel making, and we are looking at a break-even green hydrogen price of about $1.3 to about $2.2 a kg. It depends on the price of coking coal and the capital investment needed, etc., in the blast furnace process. But roughly $1.3 per kg would suffice for a fossil-free steel. Now, let's say what happens when we say that we don't want to go for fossil-free steel. And this is a very important slide. In fact, everything that we have done in our green steel report can be summarized here. What this graph shows is the levelized cost of steel on the y-axis and the carbon footprint of steel on the x-axis. And again, just like the previous graph, there are two strips here. So this strip shows the cost of producing steel using the blast furnace route. And this strip here shows the cost of producing steel using natural gas at about $13.5 per MMBTU and the power cost of about 7.6 to 3 rupees a unit. There are two extremities here. The extremity to the left shows the cost of producing fossil-free steel, which is somewhat very similar to the hybrid project in Scandinavia. So the extremity on the right, it shows the cost of producing steel using 100% renewable grid electricity and 100% hydrogen, which is derived from natural gas. So there are two extremities, there are two strips, and there are four curves here. So we have considered four scenarios, and the cost assumptions, etc., are there in our green steel report. But this is the curve for the year 2020, this is the curve for the year 2030, this is for 2040, and this is for 2050. Now, the graph here, it should be read from right to left. Therefore, let's say in the year 2020, which is the dark green curve here, we have to produce steel using grid electricity, grid power at about 7.6 rupees a unit, and natural gas at about $13.5 per MMBTU. And we are looking at this production price, which is significantly higher than your blast furnace price. But if our steel plants, they have access to solar, captive solar and wind electricity, for example, solar electricity is available at, let's say, 2.2 rupees a unit, wind is available at 2.5, 2.7 rupees a unit, then with a decrease in emission footprint of your steel, the cost of producing steel also decreases, because essentially your captive solar and wind electricity at lower prices is substituting your grid electricity. Now, this co-benefit of reduced emission footprint and reduced cost happens till we reach an emission footprint of about 0.91 tons of CO2 per ton of crude steel. Now, if a steel plant says that, hey, we want to go to even a lower emission footprint plant, and just using captive solar and wind electricity, so after your grid power consumption won't suffice, then we have to start blending in green hydrogen. And therefore, the percentage value that you see here, they correspond to the percentage blend of green hydrogen in the total energy which is consumed for our steel production process. And so let's say we are moving from 0% blend of green hydrogen to 9% blend, then there is a slight decrease in emission footprint, and there is only a marginal increase in cost. Beyond this 9% blend, if you want to go towards the lower emission footprint value, then the percentage blend of green hydrogen increases significantly. So at 9% blend of green hydrogen, we are breaking even with the upper range of blast furnace cost, which corresponds to a steel production cost of about 32 or 33 rupees per kg. But if you want to go to, let's say, 30% emission footprint of 0.6, then the green hydrogen blend has to increase from 9% to 30%. And if you are talking about the 100% fossil free steel production, which is somewhat very similar to Scandinavia, then we are talking about a steel production cost of about $610 per ton of crude steel. And therefore, I'd like to say that a fossil free steel, an ideal world, it is for Scandinavian countries, for us. So there is, it makes absolutely no sense to go for something like a fossil free steel plant. But can we, you know, make a start today, start blending in 9% green hydrogen or even 0% green hydrogen and be competitive with the upper range of blast furnace cost? Because if we make a start today, then in the year 2030, we can move from 9% blend of green hydrogen to about 60% blend of green hydrogen. By the year 2040, we will not even need a natural gas as a feedstock. All we need is, for this particular point, about close to 100% green hydrogen and little amount of grid electricity to manage the plant auxiliary load. And in the year 2050, if the prices of various components they reduce to the level that we have considered, which is the solar price of about 1 rupees per unit and something similar for wind, then the cost of producing steel using hydrogen is actually cheaper than your blast furnace route. But for this switch, you know, from 9% today to 60% in 2030 and then just close to 100% in the year 2040, for this to materialize, our Indian investors in iron and steel plant, they should think about investing in hydrogen-ready technologies. And if the investments continue the way they have been in blast furnaces, etc., then, you know, they are very difficult to decarbonize, at least, you know, directly using green hydrogen for their steel production processes. There are other competing technologies like CCUS, etc., that can be applicable. But if you are looking for, you know, a hydrogen-based steel making, then we have to take a decision today and start investing in hydrogen-ready technologies like shaft furnaces. Now, at this particular slide, let's look at three points. The capital investment which is needed to set up a 100% fossil-free steel plant, somehow similar to the public projects in the Scandinavia. A capital investment for about, let's say, a 58% blend of green hydrogen that corresponds to an emission footprint of 0.4, and the capital investment needed for 0% blend of green hydrogen that essentially corresponds to an emission footprint of about 0.9 tons of CO2 per ton of CO2. Now, we have the breakup here and the discussions are there in our green scale report, but the key takeaway here is that for an emission footprint of 0.91 tons of CO2 per ton of CO2, we are looking at a capital investment of about 6,800 crores or roughly 7,000 crores per MTPA. Now, this is in ballpark with the investment needed for a blast furnace route. For an emission footprint of 0.4 tons of CO2 per ton of CO2, we need a capital investment of about 12,000 crores per MTPA. And for a fossil-free steel plant, similar to the hybrid project, we need a capital investment of about 22,000 crores per MTPA. Therefore, this is an absolutely no-go for our domestic iron and steel industry. But, you know, this is something that we need to think about. We also did a very interesting exercise on the possible social implications of moving to a green hydrogen-based steel making. What we see here on the left is the location of about, let's say, about 85% of solar plants in India and close to 100% wind plants in India. So as you can see, most of the solar and wind plants, they are located on the west coast in the states of Rajasthan and Gujarat and Karnataka as well and Tamil Nadu. What we see on the right is the location of the iron ore mines, which is shown in red, the location of integrated steel plants and the sponge iron plants in India. And again, as most of you might know, our iron steel industry is concentrated in the three states of Odisha, Jharkhand and Chhattisgarh. And there is only Karnataka where there is a significant overlap between your iron ore availability or the location of our iron and steel plants and our renewable energy plants, which is essentially solar and wind. Now, to consider a mismatch between your renewable resource location and your iron and steel plants, we did a very interesting exercise. What we considered is our renewable energy plants are located somewhere in Kutch and our iron and steel plants are located somewhere in Angul, Odisha. And we consider three scenarios. The first scenario is you produce green hydrogen in Kutch, Gujarat, and you move that green hydrogen through pipeline to somewhere in Angul, Odisha. The second option that we considered is you have your renewable electricity plant in Kutch, Gujarat, essentially wind and solar power, and you bring that electricity through open access mechanism to Angul in Odisha. That is option number two. And option number three that we considered is you move iron ore out of Angul, Odisha and move it to Kutch, Gujarat through our Indian Railways. And, you know, between moving renewable hydrogen, renewable electricity to open access mechanism and moving iron ore from Angul to Kutch, there will be an increase in price of your steel. But our analysis shows that the lowest increase in price is obtained in case of moving iron ore from Angul, Odisha to Kutch in Gujarat. No, and you know, a very interesting thing is, what does this say about our future hydrogen ready iron and steel plants? Are you saying that a few of them, not if all of them, will move from the relatively lesser poor states in the east to the relatively affluent states in the west? So that is something that we need to think about and plan in advance to ensure that the transition is smooth. Now, what are the enablers for green hydrogen economy? And I need not talk about the graph on the left. I think everybody knows that the cost of solar electricity has decreased significantly from 10 to 11 rupees per unit in 2010 to about 2 rupees or 2.2 rupees per kilowatt hour today due to economy of scale. A similar thing is expected at least for electrolyzer technology. So currently with the batch process, the cost of electrolyzer is about $700 to $800 per kilowatt. With current giga factory, we are looking at the electrolyzer production cost of about, you know, $400 to $500 per kilowatt. A few people are quoting even a lower number. But a future, you know, giga factories on electrolyzer manufacturing cost, we are looking at around $200 to $250 per kilowatt. So just like we are benefited from the economy of scale in the solar photovoltaic system, there is a likelihood that electrolyzer cost will also reduce once we scale from a batch process to gigascale. What are the other enablers for green hydrogen ecosystem in India? And here, you know, something like National Hydrogen Mission is very important because the mission addresses all existing sectors, refineries, fertilizers. The mission, I think, also talks about blending green hydrogen in natural gas pipelines, mobility applications. The green hydrogen mission, most importantly, will have a purchase obligation for refineries and fertilizer plants that ensures there's a guaranteed uptake for green hydrogen in India. Of course, they have talked about the production link incentive or the PLI scheme that will enable a Make in India mechanism for electrolyzers and then for other components across the value chain. And most importantly is, you know, our estimates or our analysis shows that about 45% of the total hydrogen, and here I'm talking about industrial hydrogen, if the demand is from PSU, so even if private industries are not keen on, you know, blending green hydrogen, there's 45%, which is roughly about 2.5 MTPA of hydrogen demand, which the government can ask the PSUs to obtain. So, you know, that 45% market is anywhere there. So these are the enablers for a green hydrogen economy in India. In addition to this, there's another enabler, which is export market. And, you know, so countries in the East, and here I'm talking about Japan, South Korea, and Singapore, they are very ambitious to make a switch to clean fuels. And here they are looking at importing ammonia from, not from India, but they have bilateral agreements with other countries like Saudi Arabia and Australia. A few countries in the Europe, and here I'm talking about Germany, Italy, etc., they're also looking at importing, you know, clean fuels because clearly they do not have the renewable energy needed to meet their energy demand. There are a few other countries, just like the fossil fuel market in the world, the clean fuel market, whenever it sees the light of the day, it is expected to be very competitive. And therefore, while we in India are looking at, you know, becoming an export hub of clean fuels, this is something that our Prime Minister also talked about, but we also will also face competition. And here I'm talking about countries like Saudi Arabia, Oman, or Chile. They are very aggressively pursuing the export market now, and they are, you know, targeting these potential end consumers. Therefore, while India cannot export clean fuels to these countries, what India can do is we can leverage our low-cost manpower, our experience in manufacturing, etc., and try and see, can we export electrolyzers and fuel cells, etc., to these countries? And these countries, you know, if they are competitive, they can export clean fuels to the countries that are highlighted in yellow. Now, a few countries like Australia, they are also a competitor because they are very aggressively pursuing bilateral and multilateral partnerships with so-called export hubs of green hydrogen. Therefore, can we establish a supply chain of critical minerals with Australia and ensure that our domestic manufacturers do not bear the brunt of non-availability of critical minerals? So this is something that, you know, the government and we should think over and develop a symbiotic relationship with various countries so that the clean fuel market it actually sees the light of the day. Now, the green hydrogen ecosystem in India is also full of challenges, and you know, I'll just throw some numbers for you to think over. So today we consume about 5.6 million tons of hydrogen. Now, producing 5.6 million tons of green hydrogen would need, and this is something which I showed in the earlier slide, 150 gigawatts of renewable electricity, about 100 gigawatts of electrolyzers, $170 billion of investment. The land needed is about 2.5% of the land, which is size of Gujarat, a water consumption which is about 10% of Gujarat water consumption. That means India produced about 111 million tons of steel in the year 2019. Now, hypothetically, if that 111 million tons were to be produced using green hydrogen, and we are looking at the solar installation capacity of about 264 gigawatts, electrolyzer installation capacity of 73 gigawatts, an investment of about $33 billion, and with a 6% of Gujarat's land, and the water consumption, which is 15% of Gujarat's water consumption. So these are the challenges that we'll have to face when we move towards the green hydrogen ecosystem in India. And here, so these are only the industrial demands. We were talking about demand across mobility section, aviation, shipping, etc., and the numbers are already going to start. Now, in terms of challenges, there are other challenges as well. For example, the whole political economy, and I think everyone here knows, it is a very strong barrier in India. There is a policy coherence which is needed. For example, you know, what should India do? Should we build renewable electricity, or should we invest in developing supply chain infrastructure of green hydrogen? Likewise, should India go for hydrogen or electric vehicles or even LNG-based vehicles for heavy-duty transport? Should, in terms of infrastructure readiness, are our hydrogen, are our natural gas pipelines even compatible to hydrogen? Can we go beyond 15-20%? If X percentage of hydrogen gas pipelines are ready for the hydrogen, what about the 1-X percentage? Will that you know, even be ready, or what are the investments that are needed in long term to make those hydrogen pipelines, to natural gas pipelines hydrogen ready? What are the issues? There are issues related to grid reliance and open access challenge that I believe everybody knows. End user readiness will take time. So for example, if we are talking about hydrogen blending in natural gas pipelines, are our steam methane reformers even ready to blend, you know, to take up 15-20% of hydrogen directly coming from gas pipelines? What are the issues over there? What about our, you know, gas vehicles, CNG-based vehicles? Can they take up 15% green hydrogen on a volume basis? So the end user readiness is also something that we need to take care of. Of course, green hydrogen will always face competition from other upcoming technologies like CCUS, and you know, Hemant talked about it yesterday, and also bioenergy options. And you know, finally, as we saw in an earlier slide, $170 billion for industrial hydrogen demand and $333 billion for our iron and steel. You know, where is that money going to come from? And at what cost will we get that money? And again, you know, this is something we saw in the previous slide, the scale of renewable energy deployment is unprecedented. And finally, you know, this is something that we looked at from the lens of the iron and steel industry, moving hydrogen, renewable energy, and moving iron ore, etc. What are we talking about fossil fuel jobs? You know, what might happen in the future is your unionized jobs in the fossil fuel sector might be replaced by contractual jobs in the renewable energy sector. Your coal jobs in the relatively poor states of, let's say, Odisha, Jharkhand, and Chhattisgarh might move to renewable energy jobs, which are contextual in nature, to the states like Gujarat, Maharashtra, Rajasthan, etc. So that also needs to be thought over, and of course, we'll need a significant repurposing and reskilling of our manpower. So these are a few of the challenges that we have, you know, listed. And finally, these are a few of our publications. There are many more in the pipeline that we'll see in the next few months. But in September last year, we released a report on greening steel and a case for a global green hydrogen alliance in the presence of Minister Arjit Singh in December last year again, we released a report that talks about a techno-economics of green hydrogen production costs in India. And, you know, I'd like to end with a cartoon. As to what will it take for all of us to, you know, ensure that the National Green Hydrogen Mission is indeed a success. With this, I'd like to close my presentation and
If there are any questions, I am more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Deepak. Very, very insightful presentation and a lot of food for thought, I think, for all the participants. I forgot to introduce Mr. Hemant is also there on the call along with us. He is a senior program lead at CEW and he leads the industrial sustainability and competitiveness team at the council. Thank you, Dr. Deepak, once again for a very wonderful presentation. I think Apurva has one question. I'll just start with a few questions. Dr. Deepak, if you could just browse back to the slide wherein you indicated 111, when you explained $1, 1 kilogram, 1 decade. There were a few numbers under this
set.
Yes. Right. Yes, that's the slide. I wanted to have a sense, basically, how do you see the probability of this numbers actually being achieved, say from 2.2 to say 0.84 to 1.1, that's one. Secondly, when we say cost of the 750 going to 200, what is the type of electrolyzer that we are looking at? There are four different types, I have some basic understanding. But to you, being an expert in this field, what do you think is a more sustainable proposition? One is based on the current technology, and secondly, how it can evolve both from a technological as well as cost perspective. That's the first question. I have a few more.
Okay. So in terms of solar prices, I don't remember the actual numbers, but if you go by the learning rate, the historical learning rate of solar photovoltaic systems, I think they are 15% to 16%. Then, for the prices to decrease from 2.2 to 0.84, I think you need a remember the number, I think it's in terawatt scale, right? So that is the first aspect, you need a significant installed capacity of solar photovoltaic systems to benefit from the economy of scale. So the second aspect is, so it's not only the economy of scale that will eventually decrease the price of electricity which is obtained from solar power. There is something called efficiency, which has also seen a historical, there is a precedent of increasing the efficiency of solar PV system. So, two things, with a learning rate effect, that you go for, significant solar installation and the increase in efficiency, this can be assumed. But, I'll tell you, in our analysis, based on constant efficiency and the solar PV installation capacity globally, which are planned, we see a price of about 1 rupee per unit being achieved in the year 2050. Mm-hmm. That is one thing. The second thing is on electrolyzers. Again, we consider the electrolyzer cost of about $750 per kilowatt. And, in all our studies, we have considered alkaline electrolyzers. So, the parameter that you see here, efficiency of 56.5%, a stand life of 8.5 years, they all correspond to alkaline electrolyzers. Again, from literature, what we see is PEM electrolyzers, they have slightly lower efficiency and slightly lower stack life as compared to alkaline electrolyzers. But if I think now we have enough expertise in India, we can ask the electrolyzer manufacturers themselves, whether these numbers that we have considered, they are okay or not. Or in terms of the lowest cost of electrolyzers, we considered alkaline electrolyzers, but both alkaline electrolyzers and PEM electrolyzers, they have a potential of reaching of about a delivered cost of about $225 to $250 per kilo. But going below that, there is a limitation that will reach primarily because $200 essentially corresponds to a small margin, a thin margin, and a material cost, installation cost, etc. So it's very unlikely that electrolyzers will see a price which is lower than $200 per kilo. And the third point that you made is about four types of electrolyzers, and that is very important because the Israelis, they have a technology that so here we are talking about a futuristic efficiency of about 80%, but Israelis, they have a technology and they claim a efficiency of about 95%, right? And if you do a sensitivity analysis of hydrogen production cost with respect to all parameters, the most significant parameter is the efficiency of the electrolyzer or rather the specific power consumption. So if that specific power consumption or rather the efficiency it increases to 95% or the power consumption reduces to about, let's say,
you know, 40 kilowatt hour per kg from about 50 kilowatt hour per kg, then the prices of electrolyzers, and hence the hydrogen price will significantly reduce. Also on technology front, there is another upcoming technology, which is a solid oxide electrolyzer. This is something that I pursued during my PhD. So solid oxide electrolyzer, they typically need electricity of about 27 kilowatt hour per kg of hydrogen, and the maximum they need is about 35 kilowatt hour per kg. Whereas alkaline and same electrolyzers today, they need about 50 to 55 kilowatt per hour, 55 kilowatt hour per kg, sorry. And the lowest they can go is about 40 to 41 kilowatt hour per kg. Yes? But you know, the challenge with solid oxide electrolyzers is that they are very expensive. So today we are looking at alkaline and same at about $750-$800 per kilowatt maximum. Solid oxide electrolyzer, which is again based on what I have read in literature, today they cost about $3,000 per kilowatt. Yes, you know, so that is a challenge. Your efficiency comes at a price. So on solid oxide electrolyzer, for example, we know the numbers, but we don't know about the CTAP or EEM, etc. So the efficiency is one parameter, but you should also be cognizant about the prices.
When we say this number of $750, is it only at the stack level or is it at the system level?
This is at system level. This is the installed cost that we have assumed.
Okay. And when we say stack life, how should one understand the underlying premise? Like, what is the variable? Is it a membrane or is it a number of hours operational? How should I'm just asking a very, very basic question because
In terms of stack life, so the manufacturers, they'll give you number in thousands of hours. So for example, for alkaline electrolyzers, I think we have considered a life of about 75,000 hours, that is the life number that we are looking at. And you can, you know, reasonably assume that after 75,000 hours, you need a new stack. It's very unlikely that you will only replace your membrane and you will retain your critical minerals and other costs. So you can assume that after about 75,000 hours, you have to change your stack.
Just one more question. I think you indicated like 45% of the hydrogen will be utilized by PSUs. I think the larger companies have already set out tenders on hydrogen. Now, we haven't gone through any of that, but if they are NTPC or some other company, what is it that I look at? Do I look at levelized cost of hydrogen? What is the approach that probably NTPC will take when it floats a tender, and what are the variables that one should understand or keep in mind while analyzing those?
So, you know, I will not talk about a particular company, but you know, if I own a company or if I'm advising the management of a particular company, then you know, what I'll look at is green hydrogen today will definitely come at a premium. So the numbers might change. So let's say somebody might say $4 a kg, somebody might say $3 a kg, but it will definitely come at a premium. And therefore, as a company, you know, they have to take a call whether they have the appetite to, you know, digest that additional premium that they have to pay. So if there's a fertilizer plant or a refinery, right, or even a power company, do they have the appetite in their balance sheet to absorb the premium that they have to pay? I think based on that, they'll take a call. The one thing is for sure, green hydrogen will come at a premium. It's very unlikely that anybody will give you green hydrogen for $1.5 a kg.
So if the blending, what you indicated, the 10-15%, if it is made mandatory, I think what you indicated in one of the slides as well, the end result is either the central government has to bear the brunt or the end user. I think that's a big call which is there, and I think the numbers what you indicated for the steel industry, I think people will jump off the roof. The numbers are staggeringly high.
Exactly. Why it doesn't make sense for us to get started this way.
Right. So in that case, is that some midway solution, blue hydrogen, coal gasification? How should one look at it? So you indicated like transitioning is good from 0 to 30. And you explained it beautifully on the chart. But is there a more practical midway solution for steel mills in India if they had to look at decarbonization seriously?
Yes, so in for that we need to do a very rigorous analysis. There are a bucket of options which are available to Indian steel industry. So there is hydrogen, there is energy efficiency that everybody talks about, and we talk to stakeholders and they say that with energy efficiency alone there are emissions intensity can be reduced by 20 to 25%. So in that energy efficiency, there is a CCU option where we, and here there are players like Hyundai, etc., that have technology to produce aviation fuels, etc. And then finally there is something called a sequestration, which is also available. But with the exception of energy efficiency, the other three or four options that we are considering, they'll always come at a premium. So there is if you're talking about, there is no zero cost net zero solution. You have to always pay a premium if you want to move beyond energy efficiency. And of course, I think it needs a little bit of detailing out, but given this technology bucket, etc., each comes with a cost constraint and also a practicality constraint. And with this, I can tell you one practicality constraint when it comes to CCS options. Let's say today our steel industry or any other industry decides they want to do a CCS, right? What is the readiness? Can they start indexing from tomorrow? So they'll need about 6 years or 7 years to do a proper assessment of where exactly to do the index and, how much can they index. So that is also something that we need to, think over before we jump on one particular solution.
Just a related question then, are there any live examples globally? I think there's one particular project that LCAB and Saab are taking ahead. So are there any noteworthy examples globally wherein this is something which is actually being done on a commercial scale and not on a pilot scale?
So you're talking about hydrogen-based steelmaking?
Yes.
So if you go through our green steel report, there are many companies that have announced their plans, etc., and they have also, to achieve that plan, what would be the corresponding investment, etc., which are needed. They have indicated a few companies have started. So, for example, you might know about the hybrid project, right? That's another that you gave an example of. A few companies have, made some initial, they have taken some initial calls, etc., on decarbonization. But nothing concrete. In addition to a few handfuls, so nothing concrete has actually materialized yet, as in my body.
Sure, that's very useful. Apurva, I'll request you to please unmute yourself and go ahead with the question.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Deepak. Thanks a lot for your wonderful presentation. Very, very detailed. Deepak, just wanted to understand on this stack life and stack efficiency. So do you see any benefit that PEM or solid oxide has over here over alkaline, wherein over a period of time they could probably start overshadowing alkaline, or is it more or less similar for all three? And if alkaline achieves scale right now, so it will be the dominant technology to stay.
Apurva, on this, each technology has its own advantages and limitations. So I can tell you only the advantages, and we at TWSS, we are very technology agnostic, and I believe, everybody should be. So in case of alkaline electrolysis, for example, let's say, the green hydrogen blending norms in refineries and fertilizers, then through open access mechanism, which means the electrolyzers have to be located within the plant facility itself. So in that case, this is again from literature. Alkaline electrolyzers typically have a larger footprint, area footprint as compared to PEM electrolyzers. But anecdotal evidence and, based on literature, alkaline electrolyzers have slightly lower cost as compared to PEM electrolyzers. That is the second part. And the third part is, PEM electrolyzers, they are very flexible when it comes to, operation with varying renewable electricity, whereas a few people say that alkaline electrolyzers are very flexible, etc., but whatever I have read in literature, right, alkaline electrolyzers, they can ramp up and handle, but can they handle a second by second variation in solar electricity and wind electricity, right? So that is something which needs to be seen. But I think these three parameters, your area footprint, your cost and, satellite efficiency, etc., and the third is your adaptability to varying renewable electricity. So by considering these three aspects, I think industries will have to take a call on, which technology suits them, which is alkaline or PEM.
Fair enough. And is stack life is similar for both?
So again, based on literature, the stack life of rice of PEM electrolyzers is slightly lower than alkaline electrolyzers, and I think by 5 to 10,000 hours. The efficiency for PEM is again lower than alkaline electrolyzers, but I think this is again coming from literature which was published in 2019-2020. I think the best would be to directly talk to manufacturers and ask them what is their expected life and efficiency.
Thanks a lot for that. And secondly, I think we had this discussion earlier as well regarding what would be a better strategy to oversize the electrolyzer and the renewable capacity, or more focus on a round-the-clock renewable type of power setup for utilizing the electrolyzers better.
Yeah, so, if you refer to our Green Steel report and also the presentation that I made today, something like availability of green hydrogen for 8760 hours, it does not make sense. That is the obvious thing. That's why the government is going ahead with the green hydrogen blending norm. So you generate green hydrogen whenever your renewable electricity is available. In the other times, whenever RE is not there, you simply shut down your electrolyzer, because doing that way you will significantly save on your initial capital investment. Also, the space constraint, etc., which come into picture for green hydrogen blending, that will also be taken care of. You will not have to invest in, let's say, battery energy storage or even hydrogen storage. So you put in whatever you generate, and for the rest of the time, you just shut down your electrolyzer, and use your hydrogen, which is obtained from natural gas. So something like that initially makes sense, but if you refer our Green Steel report again, what you need is about little bit of natural gas, little bit of grid electricity or captive electricity, and significantly save on cost rather than aiming for something which is 100% renewable. So that comes at a premium, and so it doesn't make any commercial sense as well.
I was coming from the point that since the electrolyzer capital expenditure is high upfront, higher utilization should ideally yield lower cost per kg for green hydrogen.
I didn't get your question, Abdul.
What I mean to say is, if we can utilize the electrolyzer for a longer duration, or say on 95% plus.
Yes. Okay.
On a per kg hydrogen basis. So, right. So,
show
your thoughts on that.
Yes. Okay. So, this is something that we discussed earlier. So, I'll tell you, in case of polar only operation, your electrolyzer. I should open this chart here. Yeah. So, in case of polar only operation, your electrolyzer operates for about, has a PLF of about 30 to 33%, and hence you see here your levelized cost of hydrogen is significantly higher. In fact, I also gave you a number, right? So if you are working with solar only operations, the electrolyzer size which is needed is about 17 to 18 gigawatts per MTPA. But if you go for a wind only operation, then your electrolyzer size is about 9 gigawatts per MTPA. So roughly 50% reduction in your initial capex of the electrolyzer itself. Because in case of wind energy system, your PLF will double from, let's say, 33% for a solar only operation to about 66%. For a wind-only operation. So there is a clear benefit if you go for a higher PLF operation. In fact, if you do a wind-solar hybrid and you properly optimize your system configuration, then your electrolyzer capacity requirement further reduces to about 8 gigawatts per MTPA, and your hydrogen production cost also reduces marginally. So, if industries today have to blend green hydrogen in refineries and fertilizers, then going for a wind-only system that has, in this particular case, we consider a wind generation cost of about 2.77 rupees a unit. So if you have, wind availability at 2.77 rupees a unit, that can give your electrolyzer a PLF of over 66%, then that is much cheaper over a solar-only operation. The best would be wind-solar hybrid that will increase your electrolyzer PLF to about 73%. So, for solar is 33%, wind is 66-67%, and for wind solar hybrid, we are looking at 73% yield, and for that effect is also in terms of your hydrogen production cost as well. Apurva. I hope we've answered your question for you.
Yes, this is very useful. And just one last question from my side, and that is...
Apurva, I think we're running out of time. If it's okay, then maybe we can take it offline.
Sure, we can do that.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Dr. Yadav. I'll reach out to you again to connect you with Apurva. But I will hand it over to Ritesh in the interest of time.
Thank you, Dr. Deepak, for a wonderful, very insightful presentation. Honestly, a lot of food for thought, a lot of things to ponder about. I'd also like to thank Hemant for joining on for this call. And thank you all the participants for joining all for the session. Hope you found it useful and very informative. Thank you so much. Stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.